Blog Talk Radio.
Eastern Airlines, the Eastern Radio Show, where you come to each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our regular hosts are Steve Thompson, Margaret Bars, Howard Mucci, George Jin, Neil Holland, Jim Hart, and me, Chuck Albright. Jim Hart's going to take a few weeks off, and he'll be back. Our hosts, if you followed our show, are scattered from South Florida, Martha's Vineyard, North Florida, North Carolina, New York, and where I live in Central Florida, a beautiful retirement community called The Villages. Now, to be with us live with your comments, remember to call into the show using our phone number at 213-816-1611. Be sure you press the number 1 on your phone keypad to connect live. Otherwise, you'll be listening into the show over your phone. It's easier just to listen by going to our website at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. Neil, will you tell us about tonight's show?
Thanks, Chuck, and thanks to our listeners from over 40 countries around the world. Our ratings continue to be high each week as more than 1,000. We're about averaging about 1,300 to 1,500 folks every week that listen to our show. It's easy to tune in and even easier to listen in to the shows that you may have missed. There are three ways to get to us. By going to the show's website, which is www.ealradioshow.com. And there you will see an icon, and you can click on that icon, and the top of the queue will be our latest show, and you can listen in there. Or you can go to the website that Chuck just gave you, blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie, as Chuck just mentioned. And you can see the episode red light there. It says on the air, and if you tune in at 7 o'clock, you'll see the red on the air sign, and you can just click and listen to the show live and join in our conversations. We also have a Facebook on the website that you can go to and listen there. Our website membership remains very strong with over 750 Eastern people and friends that are now members of the website. Lots of information on that website, over 40 pages of Eastern Airlines stuff that people can browse and stay. There's just so many directions you can go. Videos are there, music is there, our chapters, some of our chapters are there, EARA, and also REPA Online and the Silver Liners. We have a page for them. So lots of stuff there that you can do and visit. Now, Chuck, with that said, I'll tell the folks what we have for them tonight. As if you've listened to our last three shows, we've been taking the great stories, they are all great, over the past 35-plus years of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association's magazine that is called Repartee. And over that many years, usually there were three issues every year. So you multiply that times 35-plus years, and there are a lot of magazines. So it's a great resource of material that that was contributed by mainly the old-time pilots and all the way up to the present-day retired pilots that still contribute to that magazine with great, great personal stories and Eastern people stories. So we're going to do a couple of those stories tonight. Plus, we've got, in addition to that, some current events that we're going to talk about, and namely the crash over in San Francisco here, what, a couple of weeks ago, of the Asiana flight. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. And we even will introduce a little poetry tonight. So we'll see how that goes. We've got two great old-time songs, and that's about our show tonight. Let's see, George Jen, you're a former pilot with Eastern, and you have our first story by Captain Hank Finelli, Jr. And, George, I'll turn the mic over to you. It's all yours.
Thank you, Neil. Hank Finelli, Jr. and I had a pretty close connection as far as his article goes, those fabulous Eastern pilots. Hank and I flew together many times out of the New York base, both on the 727 and on the Airbus. So let me get right into his stories. Into his story, he says, there must be thousands of stories about those fabulous Eastern pilots. Among them are those that generate accolades and create laughter. One such illustrious captain is none other than Captain Johnny Payne. Johnny has the ability to take any situation and turn it into a wonderfully pleasant experience. He possesses a magnetism that draws people to him, and in addition to being a totally professional pilot. I remember well my co-pilot days on a DC-8 out of the New York base, flying to San Juan with John. I flew with him for close to a year. In fact, my bid sheet would read, quote, any line of flying with Captain Payne, unquote. Lenny, let's make a deal carafoil would scream and yell, but I'd still submit it the same way every month and get the bid. One could not pay for the experience that Johnny extended for free. All one had to do was watch and listen. One story I enjoy recounting started on a hot night at the San Juan Terminal. If you recall, the old San Juan terminal wasn't air-conditioned, so it was hot just about every night. For flight 928, as everyone who has flown a DC-8 knows, although it's a great airplane, it had no self-contained APU and consequently no air conditioning on the ground unless it was from a portable unit attached by ramp service. The temperature in the plane on this particularly hot and sticky night registered 96 degrees, and that was before boarding the 252 passengers plus lap kids. So the always-in-command Captain Payne informed the gate agent that we'd have an air conditioning unit connected to this airplane before boarding any passengers. The agent supervisor then told Johnny that he would absorb the delay and that he, the agent, would write a letter to the chief pilot and tell him that Captain Payne had unnecessarily delayed the flight. While blocking the doorway to the gate, this was even before jetways in San Juan, Johnny smiled and said, that's wonderful. Now, go get an air conditioner. Well, it wasn't known by anyone at that moment, but Mr. Arthur Lewis, then the president of Eastern, came running to the gate at departure time only to witness a mob scene and no boarding. When Art spotted Captain Johnny and approached him, asking why the flight was delayed, Captain Johnny said, Art, no one's going to New York unless this airplane is cooled down below steam room temperature. At that, Mr. Lewis turned to the gate supervisor and advised him that he had 2 minutes to get an air conditioner connected to this airplane and get it cooled down. Johnny turned to Mr. Lewis and said, I think we'll soon be on our way to New York. Well, that's only half the story, because Johnny and I had an ongoing bet relative to the quality of our landings. The bet was a bottle of scotch if the landing was a greaser, but it had to be within the first 1,000 to 3,000 feet of the runway, and conformed to all the Eastern criteria. The rest of that month's flying went relatively smooth. However, the month of August brought temperatures that soared well above 100 degrees on the tarmac. It was Johnny's turn to land in San Juan on one such hell of a hot night. He touched down so smoothly that all you could hear was the wheels rolling beneath us. He turned off the second high-speed taxiway, and all of a sudden, boom, boom, two tires on the right main gear blew. He braked to a stop and looked at me and said, "If you open your mouth, you'll be taking the E-train back to Kennedy." So lo and behold, a few minutes later, here come the buses and the portable stairs to deplane the passengers, and following right behind is an air conditioning truck. The agent boarded the aircraft, came into the cockpit, and while pointing to the air conditioner said, "Captain, if you spread the son of a bitch all over the airport, I'll find a place to plug that thing in." Well, Johnny never commented or turned around. When the agent was out of the cockpit, he looked at me and said, "They finally went to school." To have been a member of the family of those fabulous Eastern pilots is a blessing of such magnitude that it makes it impossible to totally verbalize. John was a pilot's pilot. No pretentious attitude, no arrogance, no bragging, just a great human being. I first flew with John when I was 23 years old, and he once said to me, "Son, every person puts their pants on one leg at a time, so don't be impressed by anyone." Of course, there were those pilots that I enjoyed more than others, but I would do just about anything for any one of my colleagues that might be in need of my help. Thanks for the opportunity to be able to have flown with the best pilots in the world. Thank you for those fabulous guys.
Great story, George. You flew with Hank, and I believe, weren't you on the MEC up in New York area? Was Hank also a member?
Yes, I was on the MEC for 6 years, but no, Hank, I believe he was originally on one of our committees up here in New York, and then I think in the final years he moved into the chief pilot's office. I believe he was a check pilot in there, but you know what? Wherever he was sitting, he was the same guy. Great guy.
Yeah. Did you know Johnny Payne? I know Jim Graybill. You've got probably some experience with Johnny. But, George, were you up there when Johnny was flying?
No, I wasn't. I believe he transferred to Miami before I came on board.
Okay. You said Jim Graybill. Had you ever met Johnny Payne?
Oh, yeah. The days that they had that little pit special, brought it into Atlanta a couple of times.
You know, Yeah, I think he was also... excuse me, go ahead. Well, I think he...
go ahead. I'll shut up.
Well, I think he checked out his cap. He was a captain on the 747s, I think Eastern had, what, one or two 747s that we leased? And
two.
Johnny Payne.
Two of them, I think.
Yeah.
Yep.
Steve, had you ever run into Johnny Payne?
I just remember him as being a real legend among my pilot groups, and I remember him, of course, but I never flew with him.
Yeah. I think he was a tall... statue, and he could look at you and kind of make you weak-kneed. He was like George, you brought up, he was a pilot's pilot, but I guess he was probably gentle, even though he was a large man. Margaret?
Well, you know, we haven't done poetry on our broadcast lately, and I thought I would share with our listeners and hosts this very thoughtful poem written by K.J. Minor, and this was submitted by Captain Chuck Hoff and printed in the Repartee magazine. And so it goes like this, The Airline Pilot by K.J. Minor. With wings on his chest and four stripes on his sleeve, what makes him different from you? His eyesight is good, and you can well believe in his physical shape, that is true. But that's no distinction, for many can claim good health, and they don't fly at all. He's often not handsome, he doesn't seek fame, but confidence makes him walk tall. Professionally speaking, he stands at the top, but seldom he blows his horn. He knows what he knows, he's the cream of the crop, and braggarts are objects of scorn. I make him sound arrogant. That's not his way, for nature cuts men down to size. She won't take excuses, so he's learned to play by her rule, and it always applies. Yet here is a fellow who knows his own worth, a guy who likes being the boss. It is just as well, for there's no one on earth, when he's wrong, who will carry his cross. The man who's responsible captains the flight, and no one can quarrel with that. Decisions are rapid, and if he's not right, it's simply his last turn at bat. Men dealing in absolutes often become mere bigots. You've seen them, I'm sure. The harsh black and whites are a refuge for some to whom shades of gray are impure. The skipper who's trusted with passengers' lives and lives with the weight of that trust has learned he's not perfect, and daily he strives to hone his own skills, lest they rust. To see imperfection so closely at hand builds tolerance towards humankind. But mainly the view from the cockpit so grand, great men look like ants, and we find he stretches his mind as he stretches his eyes while flying his way coast to coast. He sees everything reduced to true size.
Well, Margaret and listeners, let's go way back in the history of Eastern Airlines. In fact, 92 years ago, when it was called Pitcairn Aviation, later to become Eastern Air Transport, and then Eastern Airlines, and eventually to be called by the two words Eastern Airlines with no split in the word airlines. It appeared in the Spartanburg Journal Monday, June 20th, 1921, home edition, the afternoon copy, and it's titled, Local Man Had Close Escape in Airplane Accident Yesterday. As S.S. Hallman and Professor E.B. Hallman, sons of Dr. S.T. Hallman, embarked on a flight in an airplane piloted by Mac Johnson, ex-Army aeronaut, yesterday morning, they embarked upon one of the most thrilling trips men have ever experienced and then survived to tell the story of their experiences. The airplane took off in an open field in the farm on the farm of J. Madison Dean on the National Highway just outside the city about 10:30 o'clock yesterday morning. As the big machine rolled across the fields preparatory to taking to the air, it encountered an air pocket clinging close to the ground. The machine refused to take to the air and struck a terrace in the field. The entire apparatus underneath the airplane used to make landings, known as the landing gear, was torn loose from the machine. Then the airplane rose like a bird and set out through the air at a rate of 40 miles an hour, with neither Professor Hallman nor his brother aware that they were in the air, with no means of alighting to the ground safely at the termination of their flight. Now, Pilot Johnson, who has carried over 8,500 passengers without an accident, felt the jar caused by the collision of the machine and the terrace, and he glanced downward. Well, with a start, he realized that the landing gear was demolished and all his skill would be required to enable the airplane to land on terra firma again without seriously injuring or killing both pilots and passengers. Without hinting to his passengers that the party was in critical predicament, Pilot Johnson calmly asked for a pencil and piece of paper. Still piloting his machine through the air, he wrote some instructions on the paper and passed the note back to his passengers. Now, the passengers were startled to learn that they were without means of making a safe landing. Their instructions were to get were to their goggles and spectacles and to secure firm grips on the railings on their seats in order to prevent their being thrown from the seats when the airplane collided with the earth. Pilot Johnson had no intention of blotting his long and remarkable record of accidentless free flight. He manipulated his machine's steering gear calmly, deliberately, and carefully. Now, the big machine veered toward the earth, its nose gradually and gently nearing the green fields below. Pilot Johnson's chief concern was to eliminate the possibility of the airplane turning turtle as it collided with the unyielding ground, which was an unfortunate habit of all airplanes have when striking the earth suddenly. Should the heavy machine turn turtle, the pilot realized that all three occupants unquestionably would be killed or injured. The possibility that fire would destroy the wreckage of the machine and its occupants were also to be taken into consideration. Selecting what apparently was the most level section of the big field, Pilot Johnson allowed his airplane to drop to the earth gradually. The big machine sailed lower and lower and then struck the earth at an angle that caused it to slide some feet along the surface of the field. The occupants naturally were jarred considerably, but beyond a few minor bruises and the nervous excitement attendant upon emerging from their remarkable predicament, without serious mishap, the pilot and the passengers were not injured. Now, the propeller of the machine was smashed and other parts of the machinery were rendered useless. The nose of the airplane buried itself into the soft field, but the heavy mechanism did not turn turtle, thanks to the skillful work of the pilot. The machine trembled violently for a moment and then settled gently to the earth. People who had assembled to watch the flight rushed to the scene, fearing that the three occupants had been hurled to their death. Rumors quickly spread about the city and the surrounding country that Pilot Johnson and Mrs. Hallman had been killed, and there was much excitement on the streets during the afternoon. Pilot Johnson took an inventory of the damage caused by his machine, and arrangements were immediately made whereby spare parts will be rushed there from an Indiana factory of the Curtis Company. The flights will be resumed within a few days. Now, in commenting upon the remarkable escape of the party, Pilot Johnson stated today that he has flown in 36 states covering more than 100,000 miles during his career as an aeronaut. He frankly admitted, however, that never in his experience as an aviator has he heard of an accident similar to the one of yesterday afternoon. He also admitted that he was surprised that both his passengers and he emerged from the experience without serious injuries.
I've got a comment or two. You know, it must have been interesting to be a writer back in the early days of aviation and not knowing what to call certain attitudes of an airplane, like turning turtle. I had never heard that expression used before. I think that means turning upside down.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too. It meant on its back.
Yeah, turning turtle. We call it ground loop, I guess, later on, ground looping the airplane. But
how about aeronaut?
Say again?
The word aeronaut.
Yeah, the word aeronaut. I like that one,
yeah.
Too. That's a good one.
And then this
last one, I think, was talking about I guess it was the aeronaut I was looking at. Aeronaut, yeah.
Yeah.
An aeroplane, of course, was spelled A-E-R-O-P-L-A-N-E. So, but at any rate, it was a good story. Thanks, Steve. Chuck?
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, that was some great stuff. Now to change over to a more current events. We would like to read a story that has circulated over the internet by a former airline pilot who, after retirement, worked for foreign carriers as a simulator instructor. He recalls of being an instructor for Korean Air and Asiana Air, gives us a better understanding as to what may have happened to Asiana Flight 214 as it tried to make the landing at San Francisco International Airport. Steve, will you read the report, please?
Yes, Chuck, and the title of the report is called Enjoy Your Flight on Asiana. And it begins with, after I retired from United Airlines as a standards captain on the 400, I got a job as a simulator instructor working for Alteon, which is a Boeing subsidiary, at Asiana. When I first got there, I was shocked and surprised with the lack of basic piloting skills shown by most of the pilots. It is not a normal situation when normal progression from new hire in the right seat, then left seat, taking a decade or so. One big difference is that the ex-military pilots are given super seniority and progress to the left seat much faster. Compared to the U.S., they also upgrade fairly rapidly because of the phenomenal growth by all Asian air carriers. Now, by the way, after about 6 months at Asiana, I was moved over to Korean Airlines and found them to be identical. The only difference was the color of the uniforms and the airplanes. I worked in Korea for 5 long years, and although I found most of the people to be very pleasant, it's a minefield of a work environment for them and for us expats. One of the first things I learned was that the pilots kept a website and reported on every single training session. I don't think this was officially sanctioned by the company, but after 1 or 2 simulator periods, a database was building on me and everyone else that told them exactly how I ran the sessions, what to expect on checks, and what to look out for. For example, I used to open an aft cargo door at 100 knots to get them to initiate a rejected takeoff. And I would brief them on it during the briefing. This was on the Boeing 737NG, and many of the captains were coming off of the 777 or Boeing 744, and they were used to the master caution system being inhibited at 80 knots. Well, for the first few days after I started that, everyone rejected the takeoff. Then all of a sudden, they all got it and continued to take off in accordance with their manuals. Now, the word had gotten out. I figured it was an overall plus for the training program. We expat instructors were forced upon them after the amount of fatal accidents, most of them totally avoidable, over a decade began to be noticed by the outside world. They were basically given an ultimatum by the FAA, Transport Canada, and the EU to totally rebuild and rethink their training program or face being banned from the skies all over the world. Well, they hired Boeing and Airbus to staff the training centers. Korean Airline has one center and Asiana the other. When I was there between 2008, we were about 60 expats conducting training at Korean Airline and about 40 at Asiana. Most instructors were from the USA, Canada, Australia, or New Zealand, with a few stuffed in from Europe and Asia. Boeing also operated training centers in Singapore and China, so they did hire some instructors from there. The solution has been partially successful, but still faces ingrained resistance from the Koreans. I lost track of the number of highly qualified instructors I worked with who were fired because they tried to enforce normal standards of performance. By normal standards, I would include being able to master basic tasks like successfully shoot a visual approach with a 10-knot crosswind and the weather ceiling and visibility okay. I am not kidding when I tell you that requiring them to shoot a visual approach struck fear in their hearts, and with good reason. Like this Asiana crew on Flight 214, it didn't compute that you needed to be at 1,000 feet above ground level at 3 miles out, and your sink rate should be 600 to 800 feet a minute. But after 5 years, they finally nailed me. I had to sign my name to their training, and sometimes if I just couldn't pass someone on a check, I had no choice but to fail them. I usually busted about 3 to 5 crews a year, and resistance against me built. I finally failed an extremely incompetent crew, and it turned out that he was a high-ranking captain who was the chief line check pilot on the fleet that I was teaching on. I found out on my next trip, monthly trip home, that Korean Airlines was not going to renew my visa. The crew I failed was given another check and continued to fly while talking about how unfair Captain Brown was. Now, any of you Boeing glass cockpit guys will know what I mean when I describe these events. I give them a VOR approach with a 15-mile arc from the initial approach fix. By the way, Korean Airlines dictated the profile for all sessions, and we just administered them. He requested two turns at holding at the initial approach fix to get set up for the approach. When he finally got up his nerve, he requested radar vectors to final. He could have just said he was ready for the approach, and I would have cleared him to the initial approach fix and cleared him for the approach. And he could have selected exit hold and been on his way. He was already in LNAV VNAV path, so I gave him vectors to final with a 30-degree intercept. Of course, he failed to extend the FAF, and he couldn't understand why it would not intercept the LNAV magenta line, which he punched LNAV and VNAV. He made 3 approaches and missed approaches before he finally figured out that this active waypoint was hold at XYZ. Every time he punched LNAV, it would try to go back to the initial approach fix, just like it was supposed to do. Well, since it was a check, I was not allowed by their own rules to offer him any help. This was just one of a half dozen major errors I documented on his UNSAT report. He also failed to put in any aileron on takeoff with a 30-knot crosswind. Again, the weather was dictated by Korean Airlines. The Asiana-San Francisco accident just makes me sick. And while I am surprised there are not more, I expect there will be many more of the same type accidents in the future unless some drastic steps are taken. They're already required to hire a certain percentage of expats to try to ingrain more flying experience in them, but more likely they will eventually be fired too. One of the best trainees I ever had was a Korean-American, which he grew up and went to school in the USA, who flew C-141s in the USAF. When he got out, he moved back to Korea and got hired by Korean Airlines. I met him when I gave him some training and check into Boeing 737, and of course, he breezed right through the training. I gave him annual PCs for a few years, and he was always a good pilot. Then he got involved in trying to start a pilots union, and when they tried to enforce some of their duty rigs on international flights, he was fired after being arrested and jailed.
Oh, Lord.
Now, the Koreans are very, very bright and smart, so I was puzzled by their inability to fly an airplane well. They would show up on day one of training an hour before scheduled briefing time in a 3-piece suit and shined shoes, with the entire comments of the FCOM and the flight manual totally memorized. But putting that information to actual use was many times impossible. Crosswind landings are also an unsolvable puzzle for many of them. I never did figure it out completely, but I think I did uncover a few clues. Here's my best guess. First of all, their educational system emphasizes rote memorization from the first day of school as little kids. As you know, that is the lowest form of learning, and they act like robots. They are also taught never to challenge authority, and despite a flight training heavily emphasizing CRM and CLR, it still exists either on the surface or very subtly. You just can't change 3,000 years of culture. The other thing that I think plays an important role is the fact that there is virtually no civil aircraft flying in Korea. It's actually illegal to own a Cessna 152 and just go learn to fly. Ultralights and powered hang gliders are okay. I guess they don't trust the people to not start World War III by flying 35 miles north of Incheon into North Korea. But they don't get the kids who grew up flying and thinking for themselves hanging around airports. They do recruit some kids from college and send them to the U.S. or Australia to get their tickets. Generally, I had better experience with them than the ex-military pilots. This was a surprise to me because I spent years as a naval aviator flying fighters after getting my private and light airplanes. I would get experienced F-4, F-5, F-15, and 16 pilots who were actually terrible pilots if they had to hand-fly the airplane. What a shock. Finally, I'll get off my box and talk about the total flight hours they claim. I do accept that there are a few talented and free-thinking pilots that I met and trained in Korea. Some are still in contact, and I consider them friends. They were a joy, but they were few and far between and certainly not the norm. Actually, this is a worldwide problem involving automation and the autoflight concept. Take one of these new first officers that got his rating in the U.S.
Miami, I believe.
Or Australia and come to Korean Airlines or Asiana Airlines with 225 flight hours. Now, here is the surprising thing. After takeoff, in accordance with their standard operating procedures, he calls for the autopilot to be engaged at 250 feet after takeoff. How much actual flying time is that? Hardly 1 minute. Then he might fly for hours on the autopilot and finally disengage it, maybe, below 800 feet after the gear was down, flaps extended, and on airspeed with the autothrottle. Then he might bring it in to land again. How much real time or real experience did he get? Minutes, of course. And on this 777 or 747, it's about they get more inflated logbooks. So when I hear the 10,000 Air Korean captain was vectored in for a 17-mile final and cleared for a visual approach in ceiling and visibility okay weather, it raises the hair on the back of my neck. Signed, Tom. And by the way, the names of those crew members on Flight 214 was delivered by a TV station in San Francisco, and the captain was Sum Ting Wong. And another pilot was Wee Too Low. And another one was Ho Lee.
Yeah.
And then Bang Ding Ow.
Oh, golly. Yeah, it was incredible. We do have a caller from area code 305. Area code 305, would you like to come in and make some comments? Well, perhaps area code 305 is just listening to our show tonight. But if you would, just step right in. Any comments on what Steve just read from a pilot that actually worked there with Korean Airlines and Asiana?
I can tell you experiences we had in the 1011 simulator that I was working in. We would have pilots coming back from the 757 who would be upgrading to captain. We would schedule another four-hour simulator session just to teach basic instrument flying. to them to get away from their automation that they were so used to in the 757.
Jim Graybill, you also were with the training department there in Miami instructing in the simulators, were you not?
Yeah, most you can always the guys that are coming in, you know, for the check rides, you could tell right off the bat the ones that were, you know, gear up, flaps up, autopilot on, and the guys that you know, would hang fly every now and then. It was just astonishing.
I
know what the mindset that you're all talking about. I went over to Air Holland, and they kind of have the same mindset over there. It blows your mind, really.
George?
I think it's prevalent throughout the industry today. I remember two specific incidents. One at Eastern Airlines when I was the first officer rep here in New York. We had a fellow who was checking out as captain on a 7-5, and he called me up from Miami. He said, "I'm really having trouble with this airplane." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" I mean, the guy had flown a 7-2, DC-9, and he said, "I have no trouble whatsoever hand flying the airplane." He said, "That's a piece of cake, but with all the automation," he said, "I've never used it before." And in fact, he had failed a check ride on it because of that. And I think that's become the mindset throughout the industry. About 2 years ago, I gave a talk to a group of aviation attorneys here in New York, and it got around to, you know, the fact that they had no business, because there hadn't been, you know, any accidents for quite a period of time. And I told them, I said, "Look, I'm not wishing it on anybody," I said, "but just be patient," I said, "because you have a whole brand new breed of pilots coming up right now who have never really had the actual hands-on flying experience with a jet. So when something goes wrong and that automation isn't working," I said, "there's going to be a disaster." I said, "It's just a matter of time." So I kind of tried to end it on a little bit of a, you know, humorous note. I said, "You know, just be patient. There'll be plenty of business coming your way," or some comment like that. But it's true, but it's also very sad when you think about it.
Yeah. You know, George,
yeah, sure
I think is. You ought to, yeah, I think, George, you ought to write another book aimed toward the European and Asian community and call it Flying by the Seat of Your Pants. Because
well, actually,
that's what they need to have experience. Yeah.
Well, that's
most
true.
Of them don't even know what you were talking about when they say fly by the seat of your pants. You know, they
exactly. Do. That's exactly correct.
Well, you remember some of the old crusty captains I used to fly with that said, they say, "Son, wear this airplane like a glove." That was J.B.
Yeah, and that's the way we used to describe somebody's skill at flying an airplane. I never will forget. Flying with a co-pilot in the early 60s. It was his first trip on the Electra, and he only had 35 hours of fixed-wing time, and he flew the first leg, which was going to be the easiest one, and he greased it on like you couldn't even feel it touch down, and he was a helicopter pilot, and you fly helicopters, as all of you know, constantly. You don't have enough arms or legs to fly a helicopter.
Yeah, I think we can do a whole story about flying in the commercial. I mean, the modern day airplanes, as opposed to what we grew up flying. You know, the stick and rudder type airplanes.
Yep, it's a totally different world out there. And to be honest, I don't think that any of us really have a concept of what it's truly like out there today, you know, to be flying one of these aircraft, because it's so different from anything that we knew or grew up with.
Yeah. Well, we need to get back on our program here. Chuck, let's move it along here.
Okay. And, you know, continuing our discussion about Asiana Flight 214, they were heroes in the crew. It's not all about looks and with those crew members. Margaret, can you give us a report on this?
Yes, Chuck, it's always good to talk about these professionals called flight attendants, and it's not always about looks, as you said, Chuck. So before Asiana Flight 214 crash-landed in San Francisco, the last time the Korean Airlines flight attendants made news was over an effort by their union earlier this year to get the dress code updated so female attendants could wear trousers. Now, with half of the 12-person cabin crew having suffered injuries in the accident and the remaining attendants receiving praise for display and heroism during the emergency evacuation, the focus has now shifted from their uniform looks to their heroic actions. Now, in the July 6 crash, sadly, three members of the crew were ejected from the plane, sheared off tail section while still strapped in their seats. Those who were able, meanwhile, oversaw the emergency evacuation of nearly 300 passengers using knives to slash seatbelts, calling pilots who slung axes to free two colleagues trapped by malfunctioning slides, fighting flames, and bringing out frightened children. I wasn't really thinking, but my body started carrying out the steps needed for an evacuation, said head attendant Lee Yoon Hai, age 40, during a news conference Sunday night before the federal safety investigators instructed the airlines not to let the crew discuss the accident. She said, "I was only thinking about rescuing the next passenger." Such conduct has given a measure of pride to members of a profession who often are recognized only for their appearance and their customer service skills. In the face of tremendous adversity and obstacles, they did their job and they evacuated an entire wide-bodied aircraft in a very short period of time, said Vita Shook, international president of the Association of Flight Attendants and an Alaska Airlines flight attendant. "It was such a shining reflection, not just of the crew, but of the importance of flight attendants in their roles as first responders," Shook said. "Along with training in first aid and firefighting, flight attendants every year are required to practice the moves needed to get passengers off a plane in 90 seconds or less," Shook said. "They go through timed trials, practicing skills that include shouting over pandemonium and engine noise, communicating with people frozen in fear, and opening jammed doors and windows," she said. "The goal is to make performing these tasks automatic. We have the muscle memory," Shook said. "It's a significant departure from the days when flight attendants were always women and known as stewardesses or air hostesses. In that era, decades ago, members of the cabin crew weren't expected to play much of a role in emergencies." Laura Brentlinger, who spent 31 years as a United Airlines flight attendant, recalled having no idea how much danger everyone was in during one of her first emergency landings in 1972. She didn't even realize the severity of the situation until it was over and she saw the pilot's face. "In those days, it was like, pat you on the head, just go back and keep the people nice and smile. That's how far we've come, thank the Lord," Brentlinger said. "We were just little Barbie dolls back then." The role of flight attendants in the U.S. expanded significantly in 1989 after Air Ontario Flight 1316 crashed after taking off in Canada. An investigation revealed that a flight attendant had seen ice on a wing but did not speak up, assuming the pilots knew and would not welcome the information from her. Since then, FAA rules have required that cabin crew members be incorporated into the communication system known as crew resource management. It empowers all airline personnel to voice concerns to the cockpit, even if it means challenging senior pilots. The philosophy also authorized flight attendants to order emergency evacuations. Hearing that the pilots of Asiana Flight 214 told the flight attendants to delay an evacuation for 90 seconds after the crash landed in San Francisco, giving the order only after a flight attendant spotted flames outside, made Brentlinger wonder whether Asiana's airline attendants have the same authority. "I'm sure they have a very different hierarchy and can't do anything without the pilot's permission," she said. "There's no doubt in my mind I would have evacuated that aircraft immediately." Brent Linger said her heart aches when she thinks about what Asiana's flight attendants are going through now and are likely to go through in the months to come. She was aboard a 747 that lost a cargo door at 22,000 feet, sucking 9 passengers to their death over the Pacific Ocean in 1989. After the disaster aboard United Flight 811, Brent Linger said she suffered severe post-traumatic stress disorder and was unable to get back on a plane for more than 4 years. Handling the emergency itself was the easiest part of the whole process because you train for it and you just do it, she said. She went on to say that after the dust settles, so to speak, and one tries to get on with life, it's horrific. At least it was for me, she said. The Flight 214 cabin crew consisted of 11 women and one man, ranging in age from 21 to 42, according to the airline. Spokeswoman Lee Hyoman said Asiana is not sharing information on emergency training hours because of its flight attendants, because the National Transportation Safety Board asked it not to share any information related to the accident while it's being investigated. Jean Carmela Lim, 32, a Sydney-based travel consultant, spent a year working as an Asiana flight attendant 8 years ago and posted pictures from her experience on her travel blog, Holy Smithereens, this week. She recalls her weeks-long safety training as rigorous. We needed to be able to swim while dragging another human, dead weight, in one hand and hoist ourselves and the dead weight into the safety raft, Lim said. The appearance standards were almost as demanding. Lim, who was 23 when she applied for the job, initially was told she was too old. During the interview, she was required to wear a short skirt without stockings. Flight attendant school included sessions on hair, makeup, and comportment. During flights, the cabin manager inspected the attendants to make sure they were wearing the right color of nail polish and had their aprons properly ironed. Lim said that appearance is important, but seeing pictures of Flight 214's attendants outside the burned-out aircraft in skirts made her hope the union prevails on the pants issue. If there's evidence that wearing a skirt will enable you to save more lives than wearing pants, then by all means keep them in skirts, she said. If I'm trapped, though, in a burning aircraft, I doubt I'll notice if the cabin crew saving me had lipstick on her teeth or had a tuft of hair out of place.
Very good, Margaret. Very good report. Any comments about the flight attendants?
Well, it seems like that hierarchy you're talking about with Asian is kind of fully enveloped as far as this 90-second delay. I mean, that's almost a lifetime in an emergency.
Yeah.
What would a captain think? Say that, or does anybody get any answer to that?
I can't imagine any situation where in a situation like that, that a captain would delay the evacuation of an airplane. I can't think of any reason, unless there was all burning gasoline on the outside of the airplane, which there wasn't, and. So I don't know.
Well, the mindset
those people have. I wonder if the training captain on there was he senior or was he considered superior to the other gentleman or the other captain?
It's my understanding he was.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, I can almost. Almost see that, you know, the guy was afraid to make any decisions until it came down from, so to speak, from the higher authority. I really don't understand that mindset over there, but that's how I would see it.
Well, I would suggest that that 90 seconds might turn out eventually to be 30 seconds. You know, sometimes when you're in the midst of an emergency, that, you know, it's difficult to tell exactly how much time, elapses before something's done or not done. So right now, although it might be called 90 seconds, perhaps it was only 20 or 30. I mean, I just, I, I just hate to rush to judgment on something like this before all the facts come out, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's you know, you all remember the Japanese that Eastern was turning on the DC-9s? Boy, some of the mindsets on some of those people that when we were down there, and it blows your mind how their thinking goes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know whether I would feel comfortable taking an overseas trip anymore on a foreign carrier. I have a lot of faith in the way the American carriers conduct their training. Also, the fact that they grew up flying airplanes by the seat of their pants, most of them, for the most part. But here again, the new pilots in these little small airplanes that they are now learning to fly, if you've seen how they're equipped, they have glass cockpits. And I just wonder if it's the same type of training back in the days of the Cessna 150, 150s, 152s, and the Piper Cubs, and the Stearmans when we go back into the military days. Because in those days, we knew that when you pull the power off, you put the left wing down, and you held opposite rudder, you were in what we call a slip. And in a slip, you have a huge amount of drag, and that airplane will fall out of the sky almost, especially when you have the gear down, full flaps, and speed brakes, because that was a situation that I was in the 757. And when I was challenged by the co-pilot that I would never make the approach end of the runway, and with a challenge like that, I was going to do it. And I wasn't going to do it in the silly fashion of making S-turns to the numbers on the runway. Anybody can make S-turns and lose altitude. But when you know you pull off the autopilot, you uncouple the autothrottles, you get the airplane's speed back so that you can put the flaps at full extension, lower the landing gear, and then you had slats. And then if you run out of ideas, it pays to be able to fly the airplane by the seat of your pants. And in doing that, remembering my days in small airplanes, put the left wing down, give it opposite rudder, you're in a slip, you're presenting the whole side of the airplane to the wind, a tremendous amount of drag. And by golly, I made those numbers. That's my story, and I'm going to stick with it. let's see. We might as well just move right along here, Chuck. Good discussion. We can talk about that subject for another show. But, Chuck?
Yeah, well, that's about our conclusion of our show for this week. I do have a few announcements to make. Hey, folks living out there in the Denver area, it's billed as Eastern's Potluck. July 27th at 12 noon, be at 22551 Pleasant Park Road, Conifer, Colorado, for lots of fun and share your memories of Eastern Airlines. Bring a dish to share with others. Please RSVP by Saturday, July 21st, or call for more information from Judy Wagner, 216-333-3140. Now, let me repeat that. 216-333-3140. It's not too early to talk about the two upcoming picnics. If you're in the Charlotte area, September 21st at noon, go to 4635 Pine Valley, Matthew Road, William R. Davies Park, and you'll find an old-fashioned Eastern picnic going on. Bring your favorite dish, any type, for a picnic. If you have a special dish of meat, casserole, salads, dessert, it'll add to the huge table of plenty of mouth-watering food. The best part, it's only $3. For CLT ERA members, and not much more for non-members, $5. Contact Miriam Martin. For more information, call 704-553-2615. Let me do that again, 704-553-2615. 2615. And if you happen to be in North Georgia Mountain near the Honeysy, Georgia, you'll find more Eastern friends gathering for a potluck lunch September the 14th at 11:30 till 2 p.m. You'll find this all happening at the Honeysy Senior Center, 954 Main Street North. That's Highway 76, by the way, in Honeysy. RSVP Don Coleman at 706-896-0008. Let's do it again. 706-896-0008. Remember, you can find the nearest Eastern folk luncheon, picnics, special events by going on to ERA Keeping in Touch newspaper. Find a local chapter near you.
Chuck, you got to learn to talk the Indian tribe names. I think it's Hiawassee.
Hiawassee,
Georgia, and I know some of those Indian names are pretty hard to pronounce. You come through Florida and you see some of these creeks and rivers named after some of the tribes, the Seminole tribes. They're very hard to pronounce.
I'm from Key West. I'm a conk.
You're a conk. I do have one song that I would like to share with you. And also, it has good words, and you'll probably remember the recording artist back in those days in radio. His name was Jimmy Durante. If you recognize this.
Important to make someone happy, make just one someone happy, make just one heart-to-heart you. You sing to one smile that cheers you, one face that lights when it nears you, one girl you're everything. If you win it, comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you've found her, build your world around her. Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy. And you will be happy too.
Champagne music in the background. I hope you enjoy these treasures out of the past, as only told by Eastern crew members. Many of them are no longer with us, but we appreciate them more for the passing of time. Their stories are some of the memories that make the legend of Eastern Airlines continue in the minds of so many who care to be part of the Eastern family. Until next week, same time, same station, the radio voice of Eastern Airlines wishes you a very successful week in whatever you do to undertake. Remember, keep the blue side up, have a safe airspeed, and plenty of altitude. Good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern,
good night,
family.
Eastern family.
Good night, all.
And good night, Jim Hart, wherever you are. This is Luann. I love you. Thank you.
sure appreciate it. Thank you. That was great.